What do you, I'll interview you, huh? What do you do at school?
Orange white sheep.
What are you doing?
Hello.
I do something. I just want to say that.
Oh. Yes, all right. Say something more. You know Mary had a little lamb? Say that. Then you'll hear yourself.
Look.
Hello, sweetie.
Happy New Year.
Oh, that's good.
I know one little girl that forgot to kiss me.
See you next year.
Did she?
She kissed me.
All the little girls have kissed you. Eh?
Except this guy.
Happy Hanukkah.
Mama, say something.
Hi to you, Rishida, to the vernacular player at Glad Chicago.
He's really got to say something.
Everybody together, Happy Hanukkah.
Happy Hanukkah.
More.
Happy Hanukkah.
Good.
Don't cheer us up.
Okay, Danny has the clothes.
Should I help you?
No, I don't want to.
Yes, okay. You help me. Come on.
Oh, Hanukkah, come light the menorah. Let's have a party. We'll all dance the horror.
Gather around
the table. We'll gather around the street. Today we're the best costume to eat. And while we are playing, the candles are burning. One for each night, they will shed a sweet light to remind us of days long ago.
Good. Good. Well, who knows what all together?
I got it.
No.
Well, you.
Mary had a little lamb, and a little lamb, they provided a lamb was here to go. It followed her to school one day. Followed her to school when they was against the rule.
Yes. Uh-huh. What do you think? That's a beautiful one.
Hold this one. You eat it if you like.
I'll hold it.
Wow, that was a good catch.
Intermittent legalism.
Rusty, Rusty, yeah, Rusty.
short. You know, you can jump down like a lot of mouths up here, guys. You know that thing has the wings.
No, don't touch it. Don't touch it. Good.
I mean, they always say the opposite of what it is.
What they going around.
Because right here, you know, they're afraid that the God, their faith, or whatever it is,
do you have
will
a
make it.
Do
yeah.
No.
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 Hey, I'm a request from Father Colin.
Oh, I have to talk about you. You practice it. Rehearse it. So you'll know it. Oh, say it in here. Here.
You want to have a
Dad, you know what kind of film is in here now? Outdoor.
I don't know.
Well, you shot half of it. Did you shoot it outdoor?
I showed it. I think that particular camera makes the same film in or out. Now I got some more in the car.
I know it.
Well, it depends on the film. The camera?
No, I
mean, day or night.
A good man, you said. What kind of music? The Japanese?
No, that's American.
Anyway,
first time I ever.
Here, the Japanese have a good
story. The job
if he's gonna take pictures of the little one, you give this to him.
Okay.
I'll call the big one. I'll give mine to him.
Okay.
No, you're not the big one. You're getting to be too big. Getting to be like that line, yes, too big. Hey, babe.
You're growing up.
Bob is going to take pictures now. When he does, I want the little kids. The first little is 6 to go this way, and the bigger ones to come along.
Well,
one by one. Doesn't make a difference how they come.
Production gets better and better.
Doesn't that look like Robin?
I don't remember.
Yeah, what
you
that.
Saying? It looks like
so
she was.
Do you know Robin?
Do you know, I am. He has little tiny almond eyes.
Isn't she a fascinating? Laura, hear the conversation.
I want to ask you something. I want to ask you a civil question. I want a civil answer. Do you love your grandpa and grandma?
Yeah.
Give me a kiss. Now go give grandma a kiss.
They're among the law girls. Ask Scotty. Ask your big
brother. She's coming.
Although they would not, because I remember.
Well, Bob.
Let me put in the other reel first.
All right. What's the matter, sweetheart?
Hi.
Get out of the way, she's taking a picture. Hey, you, my girl and me kissing. That's the Hanukkah. Well, he took a picture when I started.
Which one?
Grandma.
Come
here,
Dolly.
Grandma,
Esther.
Here?
There's one. You got a hand. You got a hand.
He's a Republican.
Daddy, he got in our bag, too. He thinks he's a next year. Maybe he'll get one of you.
It's important for us to remember the origins of this holiday, and each night,
when we light the candles and spin the dreidels, we are remembering. This is a part of Jewish history that has always been celebrated at home, with family gathered round. Mothers and fathers told their sons and daughters the magnificent story of Judah Maccabee, the leader of the Jewish people. When the children grew up, they told the grandchildren, and so on for hundreds and hundreds of years. There are many other things we can learn from what has happened before to make us the kind of person each of us happens to be. And tonight we find out some of these things. For tonight, we are also honoring our grandma and grandpa. For 45 years, today was their wedding day.
Yeah!
You grandma and grandpa, because this is your life, and after children.
But we're living in a mechanized age.
That's all right.
Yeah, no, let him give you that chair. You might be there for a while.
You might be there.
And we could play some play. We have a playwright in our
Grandma and Grandpa came to the United States when they were young children. Their parents brought them out of the life of the ghetto and pogrom. The Tilsons to Milwaukee, Wisconsin, and the Reubens to Ashley, North Dakota. The Reubens were Grandma's family. Grandma, will you tell us who your brothers and sisters are and how old you were when you got to the farm at Ashley?
Well, when we came to America, I was a little better than 9 years old, and we came to Philadelphia. By the time we got to Ashley, I was 11 years old. And I have a sister, Molly, and a sister, Rose, and a sister, Sylvia, and a brother, Sam, who was older than I, and a brother, Philip, was in between, and the younger brother, who's Morris, and one whom we lost in 1980 during the flu. He would be today 42 years old.
I gotta have a drink on Philadelphia.
Here. Will you tell us the people in your family how old you were when you got to Milwaukee?
When we got to Milwaukee, I was 13 years old. I was bar mitzvah just before we left Doll Country. My brother, two brothers, brother who are both deceased now, brother Ehrman and brother Morris, were already in this country. My two older sisters, and one was Mrs. Cohn, and the second one was Mrs. Zajcik, they were also already in this country. That's our family. Huh?
Their first name.
Kabul was Zajcik. Libby was Mrs. Cohn. Then I have a younger sister.
Have her.
I have a younger sister who is married to Grandma's brother. Sam Reuben was his name.
What
is his name? Excuse me. Anything else you want to know?
The children of the Reubens, as did many of their friends, had visions of a fine life for their children, a life which they couldn't have in Russia, where Jews were not allowed to own land or even live outside of the ghetto. But in North Dakota, USA, Yehudi Leah Reuben could get free land and be a farmer. The children learned to speak and read English quickly. Very soon became valuable and important members of their community. Grandpa, tell us how you came from Milwaukee and met Grandma.
Your grandpa, as a young boy, was very restless.
Was very slow.
He was very restless. Your grandpa, as an adept, never liked to work for anybody else but himself. I didn't like to work in the factory, which was the custom in those years. So I decided to go out and look for adventure. I heard from talking to some people that there was a Jewish farming settlement in North Dakota. So when I started out, and starting I did without any money, bumming on the train until I got to Ashley, North Dakota, knowing that there's a Jewish settlement in Ashley. I got to Ashley and I started walking out towards the Jewish settlement. All of a sudden it started raining. I had to look for some shelter, and I saw a great big pile of stones, and I thought that was a place where the either the cattle herders or the sheep herders take shelter in there. So I ran to that big pile, looked like a little house. I ran all around it, and there was no door and no entrance. So I finally stood and waited and got wet until the rain stopped.
Those are the stones after that pulled out when they plowed the land.
Those are the stones that the early settlers pulled out to make the ground fertile.
Ready for plowing.
For plowing. That's how I landed in that part of the country. I didn't meet your grandma until a couple of days after. When you ask me, I'll tell you. I ate the first Jewish farmer there who kept me overnight, and after talking to him, I told him what I was doing. Well, he says, I don't need any help. I don't know if any Jewish farmer needs any help, but if you go about 6-8 miles from here, there is some German farmers. They're bigger farmers, and they generally need help. So if you stay here overnight, we'll give you a good dinner. We'll keep you here out of the rain, and tomorrow we'll take you up there. Or we can go back to town, and there's always on Fridays, this was Thursday, on Fridays there's a lot of Jewish families from that park in town buying their Friday's groceries, getting ready for Shabbos. Holler groceries, gefilte fish. They don't buy gefilte fish, but they buy fish to make gefilte fish. So we went back to town. In town, I met a fellow by the name of Wiseman, and he lived about a half a mile from Grandma. And when he heard my story, he says, I'll take you out that direction. There's a lot of Jewish farmers there. So the first stop he made, I see your grandma. She's milking cows. She's milking cows. A little stool over here. So I took off my coat. I figured if I want to go out with this girl,
you
got to help with milk. So I took it out. So I took off my coat and I took a little stool like this. And I milked.
Oh boy!
That's hard. So she took me in the house. She took me in the house. And her mother, may she rest.
My mother, yes, she'd beat every dog.
Couldn't talk very good English, and she couldn't pronounce my name, so she named me Milwaukee. Milwaukee, she named me. She always called me Milwaukee. Esther, Milwaukee is here. He likes you. Milwaukee is here. He likes you.
Oh, yes.
Esther, Milwaukee is here. He likes you. I think you ought to pay a little more.
You're milking cows? Oh, my. That's not true.
Quite many times to visit the Reuben. And he found his beautiful answer. Grandma, tell us about your wedding day.
There wasn't much to tell. We were supposed to have a very quiet wedding because my mother had passed away, and these folks didn't come to the wedding, just a few brothers and cousins came. So we thought we'd have just a chuppah. The rabbi came with his family and a few neighbors. But the first thing, I did have a wedding dress because my family insisted I've got to be a bride. And I had a very beautiful dress and a veil and all the things that a bride should have. He sent away for materials from Minneapolis and New York, and I had nice things. But the first thing I knew, everybody in the neighborhood that had ever been our friend came, and by some way, I don't know how, a beautiful dinner appeared. All the things, the trimmings that are needed for a wedding was there, and we had a wedding. And shortly after the wedding, my brother took us to a town not customarily used by us, because we were trying to avoid, it was a custom in those days to have a chivalry. We didn't want it, and we were going to Milwaukee to visit his folks, and to Chicago for our honeymoon. So we avoided it. My brother. My brother said
Almost.
I don't like to tell the truth.
God,
tell
before we were married, I used to be in Montana Terrell, you know. And in Montana, I got acquainted with some people, and I bought two agates.
Yeah.
One of them, in those days, were oblong, where you used to be, you should...
In those days, they were oblong. They're still oblong.
Yeah, but I mean, they used to wear a tight tail, which you don't wear tight tails anymore. Or you used to make a dinner ring from the same stone. So she and I had our first fight. I says, I want to make you a dinner ring. She says, I want to make you a diary. I kept on saying, no, you're going to have a dinner ring. I kept on saying, no, you're going to have a diary.
I can't.
Finally. So finally, we didn't do anything until the wedding night. Wedding night, I put that stone in the wedding ring box. In the slot, you know, there's a little slot in the box. And on top of the slot, we had the wedding ring. We ended the rabbi the wedding ring, not thinking that that stone is underneath there. The rabbi took the ring out and threw the box away. The next morning,
nobody
no stone, no more fight. She didn't have it. And then the ring, I didn't have it. The stone was gone, we couldn't fight. At that time, we were offered a lot of money for that stone. I'll tell you what that stone looked like. One of the one I made of a ring, the storm, was a pupil of an eye. When you looked at it, you saw a perfect pupil of an eye. The one we lost, if you looked in it, you'd see a woman riding in the nude horseback. Actually, with a knife.
Maybe that's why they call it
a with a snake whip. God, it's all right. She had a wig in her hand. No, you could see everything. You could see that wig.
That milking cow is true. I don't like
the horse and keep it going. That was a very perfect stone. That's the one we love.
Now I know what happens to history. People with a good imagination get in on the pages.
All right, quiet.
And so on December 21st, 1915, Ed and Esther Tilson began their night together. Grandpa, where did you first
live? Well, just a minute. She asked Grandpa.
Okay.
Did you ask Grandpa?
Yeah.
You're going to be fast.
What the hell?
You're going to just, in those days, you can't get by after a wedding without
a shiver. We're taking it down, so we want to be quiet.
With cattle and noisemakers and everything, and they start pounding around your house until you go out and bail out your bride. You give them beer, greens.
And meanwhile, they even shot. They had a Syrian neighbor and he came and
so
shot three times.
So we wanted to avoid that. So we took our brother. Took us 20 miles out of the way. We went to Milwaukee for our wedding day.
And
Milwaukee
Chicago.
And Chicago.
She's too fast.
And I saw Jane.
But I had to have a watch after I was married.
They thought I was crazy.
They wouldn't trust me.
Listen to Grandpa.
So who do I take for a watchman? Or father. So I buy him a raccoon coat. Remember? I bought a father a raccoon coat. He didn't have a coat to go. So I bought him a raccoon coat and we all went on the train. We get on the train and we had birds, you know. I'm going to tell, watch her get red in her face. So the porter makes the birds down below. And she wouldn't let me go in. She says, you sleep upstairs. So the porter says to her,
Grandpa, there's children here.
Grandpa says, the porter says to her, Mrs. Stilson, you're married. Leave your husband in downstairs. Oh, he's got to sleep upstairs. So I had to go upstairs by myself. Little father. She wouldn't let me. The conductor's name was Thomas.
Oh, you remember
me.
He
says, what kind of a girl did you marry? He don't let you. I says, look at her getting red. I want you to go on flight. You didn't come on our honeymoon. Anyway.
He doesn't know, but that was his fun.
Anyway,
having
finally,
on the honeymoon.
Finally get to Milwaukee. Your grandpa was a very, very religious Jew. One of the real, real old timers. Somebody wrote him a letter that I married a Gentile girl. With him, that's worse than eating chazer. You know what chazer is? That's nothing. With him, that's worse than when we got to Milwaukee and he saw a Jewish girl, and he never kissed a woman in his life, never shook her. And
he danced with me.
He kissed your mother, your grandma.
Auntie Becky never forgave me for it.
He kissed your grandma and shook hands.
Thank you, dear.
And danced with her and made a brand new wedding. That wedding we had in North Dakota.
The music and all.
Didn't count.
That was beautiful.
We had another wedding.
Only thing I could wear my veil, but it was a real wedding.
Oh, with all, you know what pseudonym is? Tell them.
I had a dance with men, you know, men without women. I had a dance with all of them.
You know what pseudonym is?
At the end of a handkerchief.
Oh,
honestly, they had a wedding, a real wedding,
with
music and everything.
Explain.
Real Orthodox.
Real Orthodox Jews who keep
their
religion alive.
They had very traditional dances and everything. We had a brand new wedding and we celebrated for 8 days.
The Oracle of Wisdom over there.
Okay,
Grandpa. He embroidered it a little too much. The milking cow didn't
get
it. 2 weeks later, I came to get the
water.
They were delivered out of here.
No, she gave me plain water. Not
she gave you ice.
And
It all sounds quick and easy, but it wasn't. In 1915, when they were married, there was a war going on. The First World War had 2 more years to go. They lived in North Dakota, and many of us have spent many fascinating hours listening to stories of their lives there. Mother, do you remember a gypsy dance you did in school?
Sure. What do you want to know about it?
The dress.
I was about 10. Is that right? About 10? And we had our first
11.
Big fight, 10 or 11, because I insisted I had to have high heels to do that dress. And Grandma cried. But I got my high heels
from a
grade
teacher.
School teacher, right. And although our family is notorious for not being able to sing, I sang Dark Eyes at that time. Is that right?
Yes, if you had a lover.
Don't put that in there, but all right.
This is turning into a confessional.
But lover in the Victorian.
Yeah.
She was barred into the high school play for that particular number. She was barred.
Flowers. Grandma and Grandpa wanted their children to be honest and responsible people. Everyone helped to make their home, and in helping, it became everyone's dream. Mama, do you remember your mother teaching you to wash the dishes and scrub the floor?
I don't know if I remember a teaching thing, but I remember...
Not that, I won't see.
I would, instead of scrubbing the floor on my hands and knees, I would sit on my feet and she'd say, gee, don't kick on the floor, scrub it. Or if I'd be washing the dishes and I was a very, like
you
my own daughter, I was very
too.
Daydreaming and I'd be taking my time. Gee, don't tickle the dishes. Wash them.
You told me that too.
Grandma and Grandpa had to work and take care of the children and make a living for all of them. They had also to see that they were educated. There were schools to go to and competent teachers to teach them. Education took many forms then, just as it does now. Grandpa, do you remember when you were teaching Aunt Mimi to drive?
Yes.
That's when she was starting.
She was between 12 and 13 years old. I had a new Buick, and I taught her how to drive. The first time she drove by herself, I hired a taxi. She drove 20 miles to a show with mother and some another woman or two. She didn't know this, but I hired a taxi to follow her up the 20 miles. They were going to the show, and I says, you get in the show and sit in the back seat. His name is John Jacoby, isn't it?
You block it.
And when they come out of the show, you follow them back home, make sure they're safe. However, the best thing that I remember, my daughter, when she drove that car, at those days we used to park this way, not on the side like this, see? Up against the
angle
to the side. So she takes the car one time and she backs up a little too fast. And she hits the sidewalks across and she busts two tires.
What?
She hit it so hard, the corners of the curbing, that she busted the tires. You remember that?
You didn't care, did you? No, you didn't. How about the men played marbles? No,
remember, they're asking about Mimi.
Yeah.
They're not asking about Ben.
Grandma, remember the high holidays when you all would go into Bismarck and the time you got stuck in the mud?
Do I remember? We used to dress up the children extra special, take a couple of rooms, and it was a high holiday in more than one reason. Because they would love to take baths, and they kept undressing and going into the bathtub. I had no trouble keeping me clean. And then they dressed up, and they'd go parading, go to the town. Everybody would admire them. And we had a maid whose name was Esther. And every time Daddy would call me, your grandfather would call me, she would come running. So from that day on, he named me Honey. So sometimes, even as old as I am, he embarrasses me and among strangers and calling me Honey, and they look around to see who he's talking to. But he's an old ball at it, and a lot of things are just forgiven too. But I want to tell you about a trip home one year. Everybody would go home at the end of the day, but your grandpa would have to go at night because he stayed for dances, and after the dances, they played a little poker. The children and I would go to sleep. So one morning, we were going home about 5 a.m. and it was pouring rain and the roads were like ridges with mud and everything, and we couldn't do anything else but to get out and help push, so he wouldn't let me get out, but this girl Esther got out, and she was all dressed up too for the occasion, and she took off her shoes. She didn't mind her holes because she could always give her new ones, but she wouldn't ruin her new beautiful shoes. So she, in the mud, she took off her shoes and she helped push the car out of the ditch. We always remembered and we laughed about it. She was a beautiful blonde girl.
I think that's a real good story. Let's all share.
And that is the only time we used to say for dance.
Yeah!
It's a hard time to make me go, but once when I went, I didn't want to come home. It was fun. It was lots of fun.
Your family picnic in North Dakota.
I remember that we used to just get all packed up. Grandma never made, like me, I'm lazy, see, I make sandwiches and something cold and throw it in. Real fancy, baked eggs and potato salad, everything hot. And then we had to find the perfect spot. And I was quite young. I don't know if this happened every time or only once, but what I remember is we spent so much time finding the spot, there was no time left for the picnic. And one particular time, by the time we find a spot, we finally had to eat by the lights of the car shining on a sandy thing. Because we drove so long, it was too late to have a picnic.
There were many homes made before many years had passed. They moved to Elgin, Red Wing, Leipzig. Ken says that his family always lived twice, at least, in each town or city. It's almost true, but as far as we could find, the Tilsons lived only once in Iron Mountain, Michigan. We've heard it told that this was a heavenly place to live, that the city used to block up their streets in the winter so the children could slide right down the hill. There are stories about Bob and my dad and Aunt Jean piling wood for the winter. They'd make log cabins, and there would be the weirdest looking piles ever for the huge stove in the kitchen. Daddy, do you have any memories of Iron Mountain?
Oh, yeah.
That was a responsive answer.
He answered the question.
Yes, please.
I burned wood in the both in the basement stove. This was in 1934.
I want to show you something.
It was in the heart of the Depression in the middle of the early 30s. Nobody had any money at all, and we didn't have any either. We burned coal in the furnace, and we burned coal in the kitchen, wood in the furnace, and wood in the kitchen stove. And I was just a little older than Joshy, about maybe Scotty's age, a little bit older. Oh, no. I was bar mitzvah when we were in Iron Mountain, so when we burned
coal. No kibbutz.
I was about 12 to 13, and later 14. Anyway, the thing I remember most is this huge mountain of wood. Ken was not much bigger than Naomi, as I remember. And Bob was about as big as Nick, and I was as big as Josh. And I showed the kids when we were there this summer. The pile of wood was big enough so I could get out of the upstairs window and climb down the pile of wood. What I remember, I used to have to split this pile of wood, and it always drizzled in the early and late fall. And it was tough knots. So one time, I remember this very well. There was a big chopping block like this, and I had a little chunk of wood, and we called it iron wood. It was real tight knots. And I took a big double-bitted axe, and I was mad. I had to split wood. And I stuck the axe in the block, in the chunk of wood, and I bounced it on the block, and it slipped off, and it went up in the air, and it came down like
that.
And boy, I never forgot it. It really fixed me good.
And the bridge of the nose.
I remember that.
Yeah.
I'm going to make a couple of notes about you, baby. I'll jump back to the Leipzig and Elgin.
Over there. He comes
you're
out when you play
about
yes,
Elgin,
yes.
Minnesota.
Yeah.
But we also asked Elgin, North Dakota.
Yeah.
It was only about six, seven miles from New Leipzig.
That's
where
we had ammonia. We almost
lost that. We drove in the winter with a toboggan.
That's right.
Jean, Mimi.
And Ben.
And Ben.
Me too. I was
no, Bobby was born.
Just a minute. Cold,
much colder than today. They were all on the toboggan for 6 miles to Elgin. When we got to Elgin, the kids were almost frozen, but everybody got in the car in Elgin but E. E was on the toboggan
going
back
going and coming.
The same way. Remember? Or don't you?
That's why you got the red ears.
Yeah.
You remember? All right. Now, your mama says you didn't drive. I remember the car.
Oh, he drove in 60
of those. The car was facing the house, see? In order to drive on the street, you had to back out. That you got in the car, and instead of backing out normal, you must have backed out at 50 miles
sure.
an hour. You know? And,
Michigan.
Oh, in Iron Mountain. Yes, sir.
No,
Paul Dvorsky, Oliver Shulam, was there, and the two of us got so nervous
until you stopped the car, and from that time on, you didn't get in behind the wheel for 2-3 years. Because you've done that.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, you don't remember. All right.
Okay,
wait.
I want everyone to know we can tell stories all night.
That
later. Yeah, later.
All right.
Ben graduated from high school in Iron Mountain, and so did Mimi. Mimi came to St. Paul to work. So the whole family moved back to St. Paul.
Ben, too.
How long after that did Mimi and Babe get married?
One time I came up to Babe
with a shotgun.
With a 12-gauge shotgun. I said, Babe, you either marry my daughter or I'm going to shoot you.
Uncle Kenny, will you tell about Mom's wedding?
And your fingers
lit! I tell about Mom's wedding?
Yes.
How old was I when you were married, baby?
How old were you in 1936?
I was 9 years old. All right, I'll tell you what I remember about the wedding. We had a wedding. We lived in a big house at 956 Dayton Avenue. The wedding was at the Temple of Aaron. There was a short reception afterwards in the temple basement, and then the wedding party was at our house. And all of Mimi and Babe's friends spent the whole night over there. Now, we had a big, huge attic in this house, and all of the relatives, 756 of them, all stayed, for some reasonable number approaching that, stayed all in the attic. And in every bedroom, every time you opened it, were 12 of Mimi and Babe's friends. And they were there for 4 days.
And they're putting them out into the bedroom
for weeks. Every 10 minutes, they would run out of the bedroom and run quick into the bathroom. And be some noises, and then they'd quick run out of the bathroom. Yeah.
Nice friends. You're forgetting the one amazing part of this deal. All the mattresses and springs were piled on top of the bed in one bedroom.
That's right.
And it was up.
That's right. That's
it was really up to about so far from the ceiling.
An inch.
And 4 days later, we found somebody sleeping up there.
I tell you.
I tell you what your Uncle Ken forgot to mention. Eugene Ken from Milwaukee was at the wedding. She, that's my mother. She was a little bit of a woman. And she danced. Do you remember that or not?
She danced
at that wedding as she never danced before. Grandma too. You remember?
Grandma too, not well enough.
She and Auntie Good from Milwaukee came to the wedding. And your great-grandmother says, I've got to be at my granddaughter's wedding. She came, she was all there.
Okay.
So Mimi married, and my father went away to the army. The family living at home was getting smaller and smaller. Danny joined the army early before the United States was
louder.
Louder.
But as the years went by, many young men began leaving the city for the army, the Navy, and the Marines. The Depression was ending as the country feared the coming of war. More people had jobs, and more people had more money. Businesses got better. Then, on December 7th, 1941, a Sunday, the news came of the Japanese attack on Pearl Harbor. Daddy was there. Uncle Bob, do you remember what happened that day?
He just shot Seth.
Dad, let someone else have the floor.
I was playing basketball with a Sunday afternoon at the Jewish Center. And I remember when we heard about it,
Jack Peck came down and told us.
Somebody came. Kenny must have been there, apparently. We finished the game, and we decided we'd go home. That's... We sat home and we listened to the radio and wondered what was happening.
and start trying to find out.
I mean, you didn't know where he was all the time? You didn't know where Ben was?
Yeah, we knew Uncle Ben was at Pearl Harbor. We sat home and we tried to... At that time, the Red Cross was calling up different people, and people were calling the Red Cross to anybody who was at Pearl Harbor to see if... we didn't hear...
At Hickam Field.
Yeah.
How long before you found out?
I'd say it was at least 10 days.
Say, let me ask you a question. I never asked it. Did you find out from my letter or did you find out from the Red Cross?
From you.
I think,
I wrote your letter the day after the war.
I think the first news we heard was,
The same night.
No, I don't remember. I tell you, what that happened, I was not told. I was in Des Moines, Iowa. I got on the phone and talked to Mother. She told me she tried to get to the Red Cross to find out about Ben. That was 2 days gone. I got on the phone 2 days. I got on the phone and I talked to the long distance office. I told her what we want. I says, the Red Cross is trying to get in touch with my son out there. I says, I want you to see if the Red Cross finds anything and gets in touch with my wife. I want to know if you can make a three-way connection and put me in, and they didn't want much.
Well, yes,
she says, I'll try and do that. It took a day after that.
After 10 days later.
Just a minute, it wasn't 10 days yet. The third,
I marked every day off on a calendar.
The fifth day, I remember good. The fifth day she calls me up. Long distance operator calls me up. Mr. Tilson, I think you'd like to cancel your long distance call. I says, what makes you think so? Say so. I says, she says, your wife just got a wire from your son or the Red Cross that he's okay. You remember that?
Okay. He got a wire from the Red Cross.
What happened to Ben?
I says, this was on the fifth or sixth day. I says, if that's the case, you may cancel the long distance call, provided you can connect me with St. Paul. Let me talk to my wife.
Okay.
And that's when I talk to you.
All right. We go back now to 1938. It was nearly time for dinner, and the family was preparing to eat together.
Come on, help me, will you?
Telephone call came from Eau Claire, Wisconsin, where Mimi and Babe were living. Karen, what happened then?
One of the classic stories in our family.
Karen can tell you what happened.
Anybody can tell you what happened. Who knows anything about our family? Whenever it's Friday night, we had chicken. Whenever you have a chicken, you have a pippin. And in our family, there's a tradition. As many people as there are around the table, you got to cut the pippin into that many pieces, and everybody's got to have a piece of the pippin. But the call came in just as Grandpa was cutting the pippin. So we had to hurry to eat because we were immediately going to jump in the car and everybody go to Eau Claire. The reason is because the call said that Mimi was about to have her first child. Babe had just been taken her to the hospital. Was going to take her to the hospital, and she was going to have Karen. So Grandpa proceeded to cut the pippin into as many people as they were. I think there were five home men, and he cut it into five pippin into five pieces, and he quickly eats all five pieces, and he says, let's go. Karen wasn't bored for 3 days.
Everybody. Everybody is delaying this. Let me delay it too. I was in the hospital waiting when they all traipsed in one at a time, each one paler than the next one, and I said to Babe, get them out of here. They were like ghosts.
I gotta tell you, we raced the train. There used to be an on-grade, listen, wait a minute, I want to add one thing. There used to be an on-grade crossing just this side of the pottery plant before the new highway, which is the old highway now, was built. And for the 20 miles into Red Wing, we raced the train to that crossing, and we beat it, but not by much.
They had a regular radio station. They sang songs and poems and everything.
Go ahead.
And Karen was only the beginning.
There came Doug, Cynthia, Vicky, Heather, Lenny, David, Scotty, Josh, Jossie, Nikki, Jimmy, Judy, Murray, Danny, Laurie, Stevie, Marky, Nomi.
All right.
And last but not least, Janie. And plus Esther, plus 45 years equals 33 people.
I don't think you should say last.
Plus Esther, plus 45 years equals 33 people. Here we are in 1960, all of us at once. Only one is missing, and we include Doug in our expression of gratefulness and love to Father, Mother, Grandfather, and Grandmother, for it is of these people that we have come. Brave ones who crossed an ocean, a continent, and half another continent, learning, loving, building. It is from these two people that we can gain our strength, that we have learned how to love because we have seen and felt their love. We honor your marriage of nearly half a century. We now present to you this book as a memory of this evening and as a record of your family.
Open it, Mother.
Show the cover.
Show the cover.
No, upside down.
Show it
to
the picture.
This is my
first haircut.
Why'd you put my wedding picture in here?
I don't know.
Look at it.
Oh, Meryl has it. Meryl has it.
Oh,
they're so big.
Your two youngest grandchildren who can walk present you with this gift from your whole family.
All right. Thank you all very, very much. I don't know what to say.
This is just too beautiful.
This
will
all look at. Yes, we can.
Here's somebody's marble.
I have my gold, everything is better than anyone else. I have my gold first and my silver left. I know this is silver.
I can feel.
Am I forgiven if I tear the paper?
Yes, see?
Isn't that beautiful? It's a lifetime thing. Beautiful. Okay. Let everybody look at it.
Yeah.
Oh, honey, you have the wedding picture. It would have been beautiful in here.
I'll show you what Grandpa got for Grandma.
If I didn't have a cold, I'd kiss her.
I know it's the same thing.
Everybody just, it's silver. I have my gold and then I got my silver. Look at my card.
Grandma, this is your present he's opening.
Mary, look, you can read this. You read it. Let it go. I don't want to see it. Grandma! Oh, yay! 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 Oh
It isn't so
hard. Oh, the man from here. The
other
one from us.
That's a self-dyed fox.
From Scotty. To Nikki from Jimmy. Nikki.
Nikki, say something.
Yeah. To Betty.
Oh,
who? Where is she? Oh, who?
Who?
To Murray.
Murray.
Murray! Judy Pilsen.
Thank you.
Hey, just 1 minute now. Hey, 1 minute now. Stop just a minute. Hold it just a minute. Let's have a yell. One, two, three.
Yeah!
Okay.
I'm louder than anybody on the day.
We'll change it.